You're listening to Community Voices on NPR Illinois. I'm Vanessa Ferguson, and my guest today is John Frommel. John, thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thanks for inviting me.
I'm very excited to talk to you today because we're going to talk about a subject that I think can be a little confusing sometimes for people. We're going to be talking about gender, but first, can you tell us about you and how long you've lived in Springfield?
Yeah, I've been in Springfield for pretty much my entire life. Went to school here. I went to college not that far away in Jacksonville at Illinois College, which is where I first developed an interest in studying gender and sexuality. I did my graduate work in Cincinnati at the University of Cincinnati. I spent a year studying and living in Germany, but like I said, for the vast majority of my time, I've been here in Springfield.
And so what do you do on the day-to-day for your job?
Well, I actually work at the University of Illinois Springfield in the Center for Online Learning Research and Service. And so we are primarily a faculty support unit on campus. We focus on online and blended courses and help with pedagogy, course design, some of the back-end technical stuff as well with our learning management system. And I'm also an adjunct at Lincoln Land Community College. I teach part-time there in the humanities department in women's and gender studies.
Excellent. Well, that is why we are so glad to have you here today. Mm-hmm. As you mentioned, you have a master's in women's, gender, and sexuality studies from, like you said, the University of Cincinnati. So
yes.
Today I'm hoping you can kind of help us understand gender a little bit more. There's new terminology, a new way for us to think about how we use pronouns. I think people maybe who do not live those lives of someone who maybe has changed pronouns or know someone with those experiences maybe feel a little bit in the dark about how that all works and maybe even some apprehension of what to say. I know we always, even myself, I get a little nervous sometimes when I'm like, oh, am I saying this right? Am I doing this right? And we just want to do the right thing. So can you kind of maybe talk to us about some of the terminology and how to understand all this?
Sure. I think a lot of people confuse gender and sex. So oftentimes we think of gender in terms of sex. So either, you know, XX or XY chromosomes, male or female at birth. And that's where some of the confusion lies, because gender is much more fluid than that. Gender is really more about how we live our lives in a gendered society. It's, you know, how we dress, how we talk, the makeup that we wear or don't wear, the social activities that we engage in, all of these things that society has assigned to be more female or male characteristics. Gender is generally just more culturally based, social based, more how you feel inside. And I think it's important to realize that gender changes over time as well. So, you know, 100, 150 years ago, pink was actually considered to be a very strong masculine color.
Oh, wow.
And light blue was more feminine. And that's completely flipped these days. And there's nothing inherently male or female about colors. It's just the meaning that society and culture assigns to those things.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do feel bad for certain people when they say, well, I can't wear this color because I'm a male or I'm a female. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, but why shorten your life experiences just because? Because it's like you said, it's a color.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's not a commitment. It's just a color.
Right.
So I'm wondering, too, I think something that maybe gets people a little confused sometimes is how to use pronouns correctly and the importance of that terminology, using the correct terminology when talking to people, which I know is separate from pronouns, but just words. Sometimes people, I think, maybe they get a little nervous about words and what words do I use. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
I think there's a habit in our society to automatically assume someone's gender just by looking at them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and for the vast majority of cases, that can work. But there is a significant portion of the population who you cannot necessarily know just by looking at them how they might identify. And there are also, as we know, masculine-looking women, feminine-looking men. And so the idea that I'm trying to impart is that it's important to respect how people want to be identified. And so it's important not to necessarily assume that you're going to use certain pronouns just based on how someone looks, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
Sure.
One of the things that I like to do in my day-to-day life is to give people my own pronouns, whether that's in an email signature, on a name tag that I am wearing, or even in an introduction. I might say, hi, I'm John. My pronouns are he, him, his. Just so that people know how they can refer to me and not unintentionally cause me some emotional distress or some harm by misgendering me. So I think that really goes to the heart of your question, which is, you know, why is this so important? Because when we misgender people, or when we call them something that they don't want to be called, that can cause harm to someone, or that can cause them to maybe relive some traumatic event from their past, for example. So it's really just about respect, about inclusivity, and referring to people by what they wish to be called.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing, though, that I have found interesting is, like you said, I'm trying to do this better myself. I have it in my email signature that I go by she or her. But I've also learned that you don't necessarily want to force everyone in the group to share their pronouns, because then you might be forcing someone to share information they're just not ready to share. Can you kind of explain that a little bit?
There is a risk in setting an expectation that everybody shares their pronouns that you may unintentionally be outing someone. So if someone is transgender or in the process of transitioning, or someone is gender queer, which means maybe they don't identify as male or female, by forcing them to share their pronouns, they could be put in an uncomfortable or even a potentially unsafe situation. So you'd want to approach this with sensitivity to that. In my courses, for example, when I'm teaching students, I always offer my pronouns, and I invite students to share their pronouns when they're introducing themselves, but I always tell them that it's not required. And if you choose not to, I'm not going to call attention to that fact. I will just refer to that person by their name and try not to use pronouns if at all possible, just to respect how they've introduced themselves, and we'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I've also seen that people are starting to use MX period, which instead of Mr. or Mrs. Mm-hmm. And can you kind of explain what MX is and kind of this way of using X instead of using a O or A or Mr. or Mrs.? What should we do in those scenarios?
Yeah. So I've seen MX, or I believe it's pronounced mix, used in email signatures, for example, or when people don't want to necessarily, you know, define their marital status or share their marital status in some kind of business correspondence or something. And it's interesting when you think of Mr. for men, it's universal, whether
yes.
you're single or married or widowed or divorced, you know, every man is Mr. And for women, you're Miss, Mrs., Ms. I mean, you're divulging, mm-hmm. you know, some very personal details of your life
and for no reason
at all.
And sometimes it's don't ask, period.
Right, exactly. So I think mix is a way to kind of move away from that, and also a way to be more inclusive, again, towards people who may not identify as either male or female or outside of that binary.
I'm glad you explained that, because again, mix is another one of those terms that popped up, and I was like, I don't think I'm familiar with this. And now I know just a little bit more. One of the things that I'm really, really interested in is other cultures that don't necessarily have the concept of you're either male or female. They have other things that you can be as well. Maybe you can be a little bit of both, maybe neither. Those cultures really fascinate me. And I was wondering if you could share any examples of that.
I mean, I think a lot of people in the United States have heard of, you know, the Native American concept of Two-Spirit, which, again, is an attempt to go outside of this gender binary. But there's also a genetic and medical basis for this as well. There are people who identify as intersex, who have any number of dozens of different variations in their chromosomes that would make them not 100% male in our current understanding of what it means to be male or not 100% female. Sometimes this is apparent at birth. Sometimes this becomes apparent later on when a child begins going through puberty or through genetic testing. Sometimes this can be discovered in someone, and it affects about 1 in 100 people. So it's actually much more common than we realize. And so, again, this notion that everyone has to fit neatly in these boxes isn't accurate. It's not accurate for many cultures. It's not accurate when you're looking at this from a medical or scientific perspective. And it's not accurate just when you talk to people and how they feel. And again, what we perceive to be masculine or feminine, I should say, changes through time and through different cultures and through history.
Another thing that I think would be helpful for people listening is perhaps how to talk to children about all this. Mm-hmm. If you have any advice, because you and I are able to have a very, I feel like, frank conversation mm-hmm. right now. But sometimes with kids, it's even big concepts like why I told you to clean your room. Because I said so. Sometimes that can be difficult to explain things. Mm-hmm. So do you have any advice for a family that may want to talk to their kids about this subject?
Sure. Well, you know, it's funny that you bring this up because my family just dealt with this. We have a 6-year-old and an 8-year-old, and our 8-year-old daughter is the most girly girl you could imagine. But she, for Halloween, wanted to dress up as Harry Potter. So great. You know, we got her the costume, and 2 days before Halloween, they were allowed to dress up in their costumes at school. And she came home. I asked her how her day had gone, and she was sad because the kids in her classroom told her she shouldn't be Harry Potter. Hmm. She should be Hermione Granger, for example, or some other character, yeah. A female character. And I told her, well, you know, trick-or-treating is just in a couple days, and it wouldn't really be that big a deal to change your costume, and you could be Hermione or anyone else from the Harry Potter universe. And she said, no, I really want to be Harry Potter. And so I said, well, then that's who you'll be. And I think when kids are confronting issues like this for the first time, you need to approach them with support and love and kind of let them explore these things on their own. Do I think that my daughter is transgender? Probably not. Do I think that she felt a little restricted by our current gender roles in the society and what she is, quote unquote, allowed to be or allowed to dress up as? Yeah. And that kind of, that's what made me sad, mm-hmm. is how she felt restricted and how other people treated her when she went outside of those norms. So I think it's just talking to your kids, educating them, and being supportive. You know, my son, who's 6, he likes to put on nail polish because, you know, he wants to do that with his sister, and that's fine. And he wants to put color in his hair. Well, then we'll do that. And he also likes, you know, to wrestle with other boys and, you know, play sports and watch sports. And he's a very masculine little boy as well. But he also likes to play around with these different gender roles as well. And that's fine.
Yeah. You know, one thing when you're talking about your daughter that I'm reminded of is that when I was a kid, I just wanted to be funny like all the male comedians that I mm-hmm. knew. And I dressed up as Groucho Marx. It was a look. It was a real look. But I never got any feedback that I shouldn't be doing it. I think people mm-hmm. just were like, yeah, that's Vanessa for you. So she's kind of funny. So, you know, I really appreciate you sharing that story because I think mm-hmm. that speaks really well to maybe how we can talk to our kids when something like that happens. Another thing I just want to make sure that we cover is maybe how we can be an even better ally or supportive or just maybe further our education when we're learning about these subjects or when we're being an ally for the LGBTQ+ community. Could you kind of speak to that a little bit?
Sure. I think like little things like including your pronouns in your email signature, for example, that can go a long way because that signals to other people that, number one, you're aware of what pronouns are. You know, not everyone knows or is aware of that. And that also you're a safe person where people can come up to you and talk to you about these issues. So I think that's really important. You know, at UIS, where I work full time, we have the Safe Zone program. So that's another thing that you can get a little placard for your office door, which is, again, just a signal that it's safe for people to come and talk to you. I've thought a lot about allyship, and recently I've, you know, been doing a lot of anti-racism work, and so I've been thinking of how do I, as a white person, be a better ally to people of color, and I think the same thing can apply for how do heterosexual cisgender people be better allies to the LGBT community. I think you need to educate yourself. You know, don't expect marginalized people to do all the heavy lifting for you. Don't expect them to be the ones who have to educate you. You know, the internet's a great thing, and there's a lot of great resources out there right now and a lot of great books you can read. So it's quite easy to find resources and educate yourself. And when you make a mistake, apologize and move on. I have used incorrect pronouns with members of the transgender community before, and I felt horrible about doing it. But the worst thing I could do would be to grovel and, you know, just say, oh, I'm so sorry, and keep calling attention to the fact that I misgendered that person. Apologize and move on. Correct yourself and move on. And make a concerted effort not to do it again, of course. So I think that that's really the best advice I have for allies.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's wonderful advice. This is a subject that we could probably talk about for a long, long time, but we are limited on our time today. Sure. So was there anything else that I didn't ask you that you feel that listeners should really know about, or any final message you'd like to leave us with?
I would say that, you know, there's a lot of negativity in the world, and there are a lot of people, especially today, you know, we're so polarized in our society, and people really don't like to admit when they're wrong about something. I would approach everyone, you know, with grace, give the benefit of the doubt whenever possible, stand up for people who I see being impacted by various forms of oppression in a safe way, though, provide safety to other people. I think the most important thing is to treat people with kindness and understanding. You know, we don't know people's stories. We don't know their life experiences. And kindness is so much needed in our world.
To listen to past Community Voices segments, visit nprillinois.org. Community Voices airs weekdays at noon and Saturdays at 5 p.m. Production assistance is provided by the Community Voices team, Randy Eccles, Vanessa Ferguson, Julie Heller, and Tim Bowl. I'm Bea Bonner. Thanks for listening, and good afternoon.